From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Three centrist Democratic candidates for president dropped out of the race for the nomination over three consecutive days. Tom Steyer, Pete Buttigieg, and Amy Klobuchar announced their withdrawals on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, respectively, after poor showings in the first four primary races of the year. So far, Klobuchar and Buttigieg have announced that they will endorse former Vice President Joe Biden, who won his first primary on Saturday in South Carolina. But that was his first primary victory over multiple runs for the presidency. Despite Biden's single win, polls show that Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is likely to win several states on Super Tuesday. Now there is evidence that Democratic Party insiders are planning for a so-called brokered convention this summer at the DNC in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Dozens of superdelegates have already said in interviews they will not support Sanders. Sanders supporters are vowing major protests. My guest is Marcy Winograd, co-founder of the Progressive Caucus of the California Democratic Party, a blogger for LA Progressive, and former congressional peace candidate. Welcome to the program, Marcy.
Thank you so much, Sonali. It's a pleasure to be with you and your audience.
So first, were you surprised with these three consecutive dropouts after the South Carolina primary with Buttigieg, Klobuchar, and Steyer, one after the other dropping out?
Well, I wasn't surprised that Tom Steyer dropped out because he had invested so much in South Carolina and he didn't emerge with any delegates. In terms of Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar, I am a little surprised that they dropped out before Super Tuesday, although I guess, you know, looking at the polls, they saw that they were going to emerge with few delegates themselves and didn't want to be, disparaged, shall I say, by the corporatists in this race. So they folded, and it'll be interesting to see where those votes go.
Right. It is interesting given that Elizabeth Warren remains in the race, and she came in even lower than Buttigieg and Klobuchar in South Carolina. But I'm wondering how much this has to do with money. There are reports that the campaigns of these three centrists have been suffering from a lack of funding. They've sort of gone the traditional route of, billionaire donations and donations from the traditional Democratic Party base, but they have to contend with the self-funded races of billionaires Mike Bloomberg and Tom Steyer, and then on the other end of the spectrum, the massive windfall of small donations that candidates like Bernie Sanders and, to a much lesser extent, Elizabeth Warren have been able to draw.
Yes, well, Bernie Sanders, I think he's raised something like $45 million he raised in February alone.
$46.5 million, okay. the record-breaking account.
Right, and that's without PAC money. Elizabeth Warren initially said she was going to reject PAC money, but now she is taking it. I think it's her PAC is headed up by some, lobbyists or people with very deep connections to the military industrial complex, the oil companies, and so forth. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Elizabeth Warren. She's still in the race. She's not expected to pick up a lot of delegates tomorrow in the Super Tuesday races.
Mm-hmm.
No. So, it's hard. I can imagine it's hard, especially when you have a super PAC raising money for you to bow out. As you mentioned, I think Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg were facing some serious financial challenges with their campaigns. So we'll see what happens with Elizabeth Warren. Mike Bloomberg, as you mentioned, he has an endless supply, $60 billion net worth. So I think that he may stay in until after the New York primary. He'll probably want to see how he does. He's rich enough that he can withstand, the challenges of the financial demands of this campaign. And for some reason, Sonali, Mike Bloomberg got into this race. And I have to think it was because he didn't believe that Joe Biden could beat Donald Trump.
Well, many are now suggesting, and it is looking certainly likely, that this will be a race between Sanders and Biden, Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden, as Klobuchar and Buttigieg put their weight behind Biden. The big question is, before we get to the question of what's expected of the DNC, if Biden is the best that the centrist wing of the party can do, I imagine they're in deep trouble. Biden can barely keep his words straight during speeches that he's giving as a candidate.
Well, you know, I think Joe Biden is somebody that they see as their best hope at this point. You know, he has high EQ, emotional intelligence. He connects with people. He's warm. He's likable.
But he can't remember if he's running for the Senate or president.
He's confused. He's too often confused. He talks about running for the Senate. He talks about appointing good senators. I really shouldn't laugh. It's not funny. Mm-hmm. He said repeatedly he was arrested in South Africa when he wasn't. So he's called supporters
or people who've confronted him lying dog-faced pony soldiers.
Yeah, I think that there are some serious problems with Joe Biden as a presidential candidate, and Trump will have a field day with those issues. So,
but the centrists still feel that he is their best bet, and it's almost as though they would rather lose the race to Trump than allow a Sanders candidacy, a Sanders presidency, rather. So let's talk about what's expected in the Democratic National Convention. Sanders has been winning, but pluralities, except, of course, in South Carolina. He has not won majorities anywhere yet. In 2016, it was a different race. There were two major candidates, Sanders and Hillary Clinton, of course. They came to the convention with almost equal numbers. I believe he had 46% of delegates, and she had a slim majority. So it was still fairly straightforward, and there's many things that have been written about what happened at that DNC. But what is it that Sanders could make a claim for if he arrives at the DNC with a plurality of delegates from the primaries, meaning more primary delegates than anybody else, but still not a majority?
Well, that remains to be seen, but we know that the magic number on the first round is 1,991 delegates of the pool that will not include the superdelegates or automatic delegates at that point, because the DNC passed a rule change a while ago saying that these automatic delegates, superdelegates, these are party leaders, members of Congress, of the House, of the Senate, elected officials in respective states, that they will not be able to vote on the first round, unless they're voting for somebody who already has a majority, but that's not what we're talking about here. So 1,991 is the magic number. If a candidate does not have that, if a candidate has a plurality over 40%, let's say 40% or above, but not 50% plus one, Tom Perez, who is the DNC chair, has already said that he would not support awarding the nomination to somebody who walks in with that sort of plurality. I think there'll be a lot of pushback against that. And I think it's really up to us, or the grassroots voters, young people, people of color in this country, to say, look, we want you to respect the will of Democratic Party voters. And certainly with those elections so contested, we need to step up and say, we're not going to have this. We don't want you to throw this election to somebody that we did not support.
Now, critics are pointing out, reporters and journalists are pointing out, that Sanders has changed his stance from 2016, that in 2016, according to AP, Sanders publicly urged a contested convention, explaining that democracy is messy and requires vigorous debate. And at that convention, he apparently did not feel that someone coming in with less than a majority should have the superdelegate votes. Now he is saying that if he has the plurality of votes, he believes that that candidate should be the nominee for the party. Is there anything to note there? Is it true that Sanders has changed his position on who should get the nomination from 2016 to this year?
Sonali, I can't speak for Bernie Sanders or for his campaign, but I am reminded of the corruption that went on in that race in 2016, when the DNC was openly favoring Bernie Sanders, when there was so much tumult at the Nevada caucus.
Openly favoring Clinton, you mean?
Yeah, and I can't help but think that may have played into his position at the time. But shortly thereafter, I mean, he called for elimination of the superdelegates. The Unity Reform Commission, which was a commission formed by the DNC under Tom Perez's leadership, with a majority of those, or most of them, being Hillary Clinton supporters. There were many Bernie supporters as well in that commission. They're the ones that reached a compromise, even though he initially and his supporters initially wanted to eliminate superdelegates. But it's very difficult to get a body of superdelegates to eliminate themselves. Hmm. So
this is how AP explained.
Compromise was that they couldn't vote on the first round.
I see. Right. So this is how AP explained it. Just piggybacking on what you said, under these new DNC rules, if no candidate receives support from a majority of pledged delegates on the first ballot at the convention, about 770 superdelegates would be allowed to vote on a second ballot. Those rule changes came about after the 2016 election because Sanders and his top advisors insisted on diminishing the roles of superdelegates at the convention. But we know from a New York Times article that interviewed dozens of superdelegates that most are adamantly against Sanders as the nominee. Who are the superdelegates in general?
The superdelegates are they're also called automatic delegates. They include elected officials, party leaders, every Democratic Party member of the House and the Senate, as well as DNC staff. So if you are listening to this, if you're watching this show and you do not want superdelegates to railroad Bernie Sanders on a second ballot, pick up the phone, call your Democratic Party member of the House or the Senate and tell them how you feel. Because they will have a say if it goes to a second round.
Okay, so just to reiterate, the 770 superdelegates are formed of every Democratic member of the House and the Senate and their staffers.
Well,
top staffers, I should say.
Not the House staffers, but the DNC staffers.
The DNC staffers.
And if you have, you know, in your state, you have a Democratic Party. Who's the chair? Who's the vice chair? They may be superdelegates as well. So it behooves us all to communicate with these members of the House and Senate and the party leaders about how we feel, that we do not want them to subvert the will of Democratic Party voters.
But if Sanders does come in without a majority, then the will of Democratic Party voters is in question, right? It's not a clear will.
Well, it is correct. However, if somebody has 40-45%.
And nobody else comes that close, that's right.
No, nobody, who else is going to come that close? I mean, you know, Joe Biden, he represents, in my opinion, he represents the past, a longing for the past. He has a record that, I'm sure he's proud of some of his accomplishments, but he supported the authorization of the use of force in Iraq. He pushed through a bankruptcy bill that makes it virtually impossible for students to discharge college debt. He suppressed some of the testimony during the Anita Hill hearings. There's a lot that needs to be challenged or questioned, and it's going to be a tough road for Biden in this primary campaign, as well as in the general, should he be the candidate. I think in all the polls, as Bernie mentioned, he's been beating Trump. Why the DNC and why the party elites are resisting so much raises the question of what do they have invested in the status quo?
Right. I mean, the superdelegates are essentially the status quo almost by definition. So if the DNC is arrived at with Sanders having a plurality, say 40-something%, Biden would necessarily have fewer than that, maybe 20 or 30% of the votes, depending upon how long Elizabeth Warren remains and if Bloomberg manages to siphon off any votes. If they broker the convention in favor of Biden, that would be far less democratic than brokering it in favor of somebody who's winning a plurality, right?
That's right. And there's a lot at stake because you're going to need a level of party unity to defeat Donald Trump in November. You can't have a fractured party. People will stay home. They won't vote. They won't. The base will not get out there and campaign. So it's going to be a tough test for the DNC and for all of us. It's really a matter of all of us weighing in. We don't have to throw up our hands and say there's nothing we can do. You know, this goes to a second round. We have to be prepared beforehand to voice our concerns about the subversion of democracy, be it a majority or an overwhelming plurality at the DNC convention in July in Milwaukee.
There are now reports that there's going to be a big mobilization in July at the DNC. Activists have announced that they're going to be showing up in huge numbers. They're planning a pretty strong protest already, which unfortunately, as we know from what happened in 2016, Sanders' backers and their enthusiasm for their candidate is often twisted into some sort of, you know, Bernie Bros myth, this aggressive, you know, rigid, inflexible left is going to bully the Democratic Party into, you know, having its way. I imagine if there is a big mobilization by Sanders' voters in July, that we'll see even more of that. And then we're really talking. And this is exactly what Trump wants, it seems. He's gleefully watching this implosion within the Democratic Party.
Exactly. He would love to see a repeat of Chicago 1968, where activists, peace activists, were in the street having their heads bashed in by the Chicago police, or riots breaking out at the DNC convention. We don't want that. We want democracy at the convention. And the best way to achieve that is to, you know, call out these elites when we can, lobby every superdelegate that we know, get out there and knock on doors for the candidate that we want, so that they do walk into that convention with a majority. That's the best answer, really.
Glenn Greenwald of The Intercept wrote a piece about that 1968 Democratic convention that really became this flashpoint, coming as it did in the 1960s, or near the end of that very tumultuous decade. One of the things that Pete Buttigieg said during a speech before he announced he was withdrawing his candidacy, he made a jab at which direction, at the Sanders' wing of the party, saying that, you know, we have to decide which direction we want to choose. And I'm paraphrasing him. He said Trump wants to take us back to the regressive 1950s. And Sanders wants to take us to the revolutionary 1960s. A lot of people pointed out that that was essentially slamming the progress of the civil rights movement.
Yes, I think that was a very problematic statement that he made. I mean, we have a lot to be proud of for achievements that were made in the 1960s and for the spirit of the 60s.
That people like him have benefited from. Young people, as an out LGBTQ person, people of color benefited, women.
You have to ask yourselves, does the DNC, or do these party elites who are backing Joe Biden and pressuring candidates to get out, are they willing to risk it all? Do they want another 4 years of Donald Trump? We know from the polls, Bernie Sanders can beat Donald Trump. What we don't know is what's going to happen if he's not the candidate. And we have a candidate who talks about appointing senators.
Let's talk about Elizabeth Warren. After she lost her fourth race in South Carolina, coming in fourth as well of the top several candidates, she gave a fiery speech and she said, "This crisis demands more than a senator who has good ideas, but whose 30-year track record shows he consistently calls for things he fails to get done and consistently opposes things he nevertheless fails to stop." It might be the strongest statement she has made attacking Sanders yet, which was kind of shocking, I think, for people who saw her as his ideological, twin, if you will, on the campaign trail. What do you make of this?
I'm mystified as well, Sonali. At one time, there was talk of Bernie choosing her as his vice presidential running mate, of him looking into also if she could serve at the same time as his Secretary of the Treasury. They called each other a friend. And it's just mystifying to see her turn on him and his supporters in a way that doesn't make much sense to me. Certainly, she and Bernie Sanders share a lot more in terms of platform playings and values than she shares with Joe Biden or these corporatists. I don't know what her playbook is at this point, taking all this PAC money and backing away from Medicare for All. It's very disappointing. And will she pick up some delegates for maybe Klobuchar? Maybe, some votes, maybe tomorrow, or rather on Super Tuesday. But I don't know what her end game is, unless she thinks that when she shows up at the convention, if she's still in the race, and I don't think she's going to have too many delegates, that she will be a power broker of some sort. It's very disappointing.
It's interesting because she is somebody who in 2016, even back then when she was seen as somebody who was at least ideologically allied with Sanders, ended up throwing her lot behind Hillary Clinton. And this is pure speculation on my part, but it seems to me that Elizabeth Warren is a kind of candidate who sincerely believes in progressive politics, but wants to win so bad that she tends to undermine her own ideals and in the interest of, quote, getting things done, sides with the centrist, which means that if she were to be president, would she go back on promises that she is making because, you know, she is getting things done? But that's all Democrats, you know, have promised who've entered the White House over the past several decades. They've gotten things done, and those things haven't been the things that necessarily their base has wanted.
Yeah, it's troubling. Her platform is admirable. She's has a progressive platform, but lately she has suggested that she won't necessarily be loyal to that platform, that she wants to win. She's ambitious, you know. And in terms of Bernie and the comments that she made, if it's all right, I would like to respond to those. You know, Bernie Sanders beat a Republican for the Senate. He brought Republicans together with Democrats and independents in Burlington when he was a mayor. While he's been in Congress, he partnered with John McCain, a Republican, to pass legislation allotting billions of dollars for veteran health care. He was known as the Amendment King. He passed a lot of he inserted a lot of riders into legislation, some of which established millions of dollars for community health clinics. He is the only one who has been able to pass legislation calling for an audit, the first ever audit of the Federal Reserve. This was after the 2008 financial collapse, when suddenly overnight, the federal government bailed out the big banks to the tune of $16 trillion in zero interest money. I mean, it's outrageous. And he's the only one who got that Federal Reserve to take a closer look at the, what happened there. Bernie Sanders has been an opponent of the Iraq invasion. You know, he opposed the authorization of the use of military force in Iraq. He opposed the Patriot Act. He was able to get recently a Republican Senate to sign on to his legislation to prohibit Trump from funding the Saudi genocide in Yemen. Well, Trump vetoed that legislation, but you know, still, that's incredible to be able to persuade a Republican Senate to side with him on that. And he, right now, he's the author of legislation to prohibit Trump from attacking Iran without congressional approval. So I would be remiss if I didn't talk about his many accomplishments while in the House and the Senate.
And yet there is this prevailing narrative that he has not gotten anything done in his 13 years on the Senate. And before that, of course, he was in the House. It's quite interesting to see that, because that seems to be, you know, the centrist position is don't back Bernie, he's too extreme. But Warren's position is don't back Bernie because he can't get anything done.
Well, she was a Republican for many years. So what did she get? I think she voted for George Bush.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's an interesting issue that isn't coming up very much. Well, finally, Marcy, heading into as the Super Tuesday races wrap up, the South Carolina win by Biden was seen as by many in the media as a turning point for Biden's flagging performance. But if polls hold, he's probably not going to do as well as he thinks he might do on Super Tuesday, because even if Klobuchar, Steyer and Buttigieg have backed out, a lot of states like California have had early voting, and people might have voted for those candidates that have dropped out. And it's not clear if after they drop out, they would have backed Biden anyway. They might have backed Sanders. So do you counter this media narrative that the South Carolina win changed everything for Biden?
No. I mean, in California, where I am, 40 to 50% of the people have already voted. And in a lot of these 14 states that are voting on Super Tuesday, they've already voted. A lot of people have already voted. So I don't think it will change the metrics that much. You know, it may throw a few more delegates to Biden's camp. But, you know, it's really a question mark as to where those votes are going to go for Pete Buttigieg. You know, recently I was in a restaurant, talking to a cashier who saw my button and said, I like Bernie. I also like Pete Buttigieg. I'm not sure who I'm going to vote for. And that's what I've heard in the street, too. So, and even the Morning Consult poll said most of his votes would go to Bernie Sanders. So we'll see.
Well, Marcy, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
We'll see how this very critical election year plays out. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest has been Marcy Winograd. She's the co-founder of the Progressive Caucus of the California Democratic Party. She's a blogger with LA Progressive and former congressional peace candidate. We've been discussing the latest in the primary elections. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and now Spotify.